Welcome to episode 32 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
A good number of things to talk about this week. I've been really surprised and impressed over the last couple of months about how many different topics we've got to talk about in the podcasts, and that is definitely the case this week. Let's start with our production news roundup. First up, there is a brief interview that Temuera Morrison did on the topic of the Book of Boba Fett. As we expect, these sort of interviews don't give away a lot. They almost always start with the actor or whoever's being interviewed declaring that they're not able to give away a lot of information. But he does utter a few quotes that I think do give us a few clues on some level. This is what TM had to say about his recent filming of The Book of Boba Fett. He was actually promoting a different movie, but of course Star Wars, the topic of Star Wars did come up. He tells us that it's in the timeline of The Mandalorian, so I guess we got to go back and see. We've got to look at the timeline, we've got to look at where Boba has been, we've got to keep the fans happy. So this does speak to, in one shape or another, filling in the gaps since Return of the Jedi. And we knew that this was going to happen, but it's just nice to hear him say it at this level because it implies that it will be more than just a passing comment, just a passing explanation. Tim also goes on to say, it's a duo thing. We've got Ming-Na Wen in there. She's playing the master assassin, Fennec Shand. Now, we talked about Ming-Na Wen being interviewed a few weeks back in a previous podcast and discussed the notion that it's looking a little bit like the Book of Boba Fett will have a bit of a balance between Fennec Shand and Boba Fett, that they'll be, you know, both high-tier characters rather than one being focused on more than the other. And I think that's a good thing, a fun thing. It adds a bit of a dimension. If we focus too much on Boba Fett, then we risk the story just sort of having a bit of a feel that's too close to The Mandalorian, but having two distinct characters with different motivations and different arcs, I think will give nice balance and nice variety.
I think it'll be fun if we see that first interaction between Boba Fett and Fennec Shand, or what we assume will be the first interaction where we see his boots next to her body back in that first season of The Mandalorian where we think she's dead, but obviously she isn't. It would be fun for them to sort of explain what happened there,
how he
rescued her, and whether they had crossed paths prior to that. Like, was there a specific reason why he decided to help her? Obviously, she was very wounded, and he's obviously felt some reason or need to rescue her and save her. So there's obviously a little bit of a dynamic between the two. She obviously owes Boba Fett her life. Did they cross paths in the bounty hunting world somewhere between Bad Batch and The Mandalorian? So they know each other, so he wants to help her. But obviously they work well together. She doesn't seem to be sort of begrudgingly subservient to him, like in debt. She seems to, you know, want to work together with him, and they do seem to work well, and they're sort of loyal, but not in an unbalanced way. So I want to see what took place after that very brief scene in the first season of The Mandalorian, and how they've sort of bonded to the point where we get to see their adventures together in The Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. It's not just the deep history that we're missing out on, but that very recent history. There's definitely a story to be told. Whether or not they will tell it, we don't yet know, but it would be satisfying if they did fill in that gap. Tim also goes on to describe some of the directors that are involved in The Book of Boba Fett, many of which we knew, but it's nice to hear the list. Robert Rodriguez, who we've seen actually behind the scenes working with Tim on The Mandalorian, and we knew that he had a strong involvement in The Book of Boba Fett. Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, but also Bryce Dallas Howard. And some of these directors may well be getting more than one episode each through the season.
I'm enjoying seeing that many of the Mandalorian directors are also directing episodes for The Book of Boba Fett. Obviously, the style and vibe and action and storytelling of The Mandalorian has been very popular. So we can sort of expect a sort of a similar flavor with The Book of Boba Fett, which I think will marry quite nicely because we have a lot of overlap with the characters. This is a little bit of an offshoot story, so I think keeping a similar style will keep the fans happy. We know what to expect. You know, we already like the episodes from The Mandalorian, so it's all just more of the same good stuff.
All right, moving on to talk about Star Wars Visions. Now, this is a series of anime shorts that are going to be coming to Disney+. We found out quite a lot about them over the last week or so. A lot of information came out at the Anime Expo Lite, which we talked about a number of podcasts back. But immediately following that, StarWars.com had a lot of information on their website, including a 3-plus-minute sort of preview video. We've actually captured all the frames from that preview video, and you can check out that gallery on SWNZ. And the reason it's actually worth doing that is because it's a very fast-moving teaser, and some of the frames are literally only up there for, you know, fractions of a second each, and it's nice to see them and appreciate them in still form. So this bundle of 9 shorts coming from a variety of Japanese anime studios and Japanese directors will be loaded up onto Disney Plus all in one hit, we believe, on September the 22nd. Just before I go into a little bit more detail, there's a point there that's really worth noting. September the 22nd is a Wednesday. We've heard that Disney Plus is going to be shifting to a Wednesday release cycle for most, if not all, of its new content moving forward for a number of different reasons, partly due to competition with other platforms, but also just, you know, validation that Wednesday is a good release day because it's been working for them for other franchises. So Visions will be coming out on September the 22nd on Wednesday, and we can also presume down the line Book of Boba Fett may well be coming out on a Wednesday release cycle.
It's interesting that they've changed it, obviously, since Disney Plus launched in New Zealand. The American release date means that its most content has been released on a Friday evening for us. And with the Loki series, they shifted to a Wednesday. And I guess that experiment or that little offshoot has done very well for them, because now shifting all of their content to a Wednesday release date. Obviously, I don't really mind when in the week we get Star Wars. It's all a little bit of the same, but it is kind of an exciting sort of midweek bonus. And I guess with everything coming out on Wednesday, it won't be spread. I thought they might have put Loki in the middle of the week so it wasn't clashing with some of their other releases. So it's interesting to see that they are just going to shift all of them to Wednesday, so they'll all drop. So if you're a fan of Marvel and some of the other franchises that Disney Plus has been putting out, it's all going to drop on a Wednesday.
Yeah,
it's looking like going forward.
We don't have solid confirmation about the Book of Boba Fett, but we're presuming based on what we've heard and what we've seen. So why anime? Why is Lucasfilm doing anime at this point? Well, it's an opportunity for them to penetrate into newer markets and a newer audience, both locally but also into different countries. We know that anime is a very, very popular style, both in Japan, of course, but also around the globe. We see that even in New Zealand quite significantly. And let's not forget that George Lucas's 1977 Star Wars was highly inspired by Akira Kurosawa's 1958 samurai classic, The Hidden Fortress. He's pretty much stated that, and that's well known and well, a well-established fact, a well-established point of derivation, right to the point that the one time I visited Skywalker Ranch a few years back now, spent time in the Akira Kurosawa mixing stage, which is one of the Skywalker Sound mixing stages where they have capacity for full orchestras, recording of full orchestras, and the relationship to Akira Kurosawa and his material and style is acknowledged at that level. Okay, so we've got a list of the 9 titles that we're expecting to see. They don't tell us a lot, but they're useful anchor points when we see the artwork, the concept artwork and the development artwork. Now, I have to be honest that these anime studios, the names of them don't necessarily mean a lot to me. I don't have a lot of familiarity with them. I am looking forward to this series in general, but my background isn't really in this space. I apologize if I mispronounce any of these, but we've got Kamikaze Delga with the title of The Jewel, Geno Studio doing Lop and Oko, Studio Colorido, Tatooine Rhapsody. Trigger have 2 titles, The Twins and The Elder. They may well be related, just sort of 2 episodes. Kinema Citrus, The Village Bride, Science Saru Akakiri, Science Saru 2B1 or T0B1, and Production IG, The Ninth Jedi. The revelation of all of those titles and accompanying studios is relevant because it does relate to a novel that we've got a little bit more information about that I'll come to shortly. But I'll just talk about the notion of anime and manga in general, because there is and this whole sort of expanded universe that's semi-canon or canon adjacent or straight up non-canon, depending on how you really want to conceptualize it, because there is a long-standing tradition of it in Star Wars material, frankly, going right back to the Star Wars Tales comics and the Star Wars Visions, which were the retelling of the original trilogy from different points of view.
Obviously, these alternate stories have been quite popular over the years. As you said, the Star Wars Tales was a collection of sort of short comic stories by artists just to kind of do like a play with your imagination. And there were a couple of pieces in there that resonated quite well with fans, ideas that actually ended up being more concrete. That was one of the very first iterations of what if Darth Maul had lived and an artist rendered him with cybernetic legs. And lo and behold, he would eventually return in the Clone Wars with cybernetic legs, not unlike the way that they were originally depicted. And even before he turned up in the Clone Wars, that idea was so popular that Sideshow Collectibles actually released a premium format sort of mythos statue of Darth Maul with cybernetic legs. And there was a Sideshow also did a sort of a concept idea of nomadic Obi-Wan, like him living in the Tatooine desert with the remnants of Clone Wars armor and Qui-Gon's lightsaber and things like that. So going back, you know, many years, there has been this interest on a licensee level, even above fan level, of playing around with these sort of untold stories and sort of different things that aren't actually solidified in the sort of official storyline, but just sort of playing around with ideas. So this feels like a continuation of that, letting artists sort of really play in that world without being constrained with having to fit within an established style, storyline, or even sort of the universe. Like they can be within different, they can play around with the parameters a lot more freely than if they had to create within the established canon.
And there are other connections that are worth just mentioning as well, in terms of connections between this series and other cultures and other interpretations and styles, because of course we have had, coming out of Japan, the samurai interpretations and Japanese historic culture interpretations of troopers and characters, and they're really very popular, aren't they? The movie realization figures.
Yes, and I really do like the style of those figures, and we have even seen artwork from artists sort of playing around with sort of samurai art, but done with Star Wars characters and things like that. So there has been sort of a long-standing sort of playing around with the Asian influence and Asian styles. Sideshow even did a sort of a porcelain-inspired stormtrooper figure that had like sort of like a, it reminded me of like Japanese porcelain or something, that had this sort of blue decorations on it that felt sort of Eastern inspired, as a nod to some of the origins.
And just to reiterate, this series, it's been described as non-canon, but I believe it's going to be presented in a style where you can interpret it as existing in the Star Wars galaxy, but just in a way that doesn't interfere with or contradict or interact with the main storyline. So technically non-canon, but if you want to accept it as being canon or existing, you can easily do so.
It's interesting to see Disney in the wider scale playing around with a lot of these sort of, it almost feels like taking like fan fiction ideas, you know, playing around with like, what if we twisted this? What if this happened? Just today we saw a more in-depth trailer for the Marvel animated series, What If, where they twist some things, like what if Peggy Carter was Captain America rather than Steve Rogers, and how that would affect the story. So we're seeing on a larger scale, Disney really sort of playing around with this sort of alternate ideas. Obviously within Marvel we have the well-established notion of the multiverse with alternate realities, so it fits quite well in there, and I haven't heard yet whether they're considered to sort of be part of more an official storyline, but in any way it's fun to see them on sort of an official scale playing around with these alternate ideas, alternate stories, and it's really neat to see them expanding into the anime style, because it's such a popular style. And this could be, I mean, if you were cynical, you could see this as Disney trying to tap more into the very lucrative Asian market by making Star Wars content that's very Western, but doing it in a very Asian style to draw more people into knowing and loving Star Wars. But at the same time, I think it's more about just getting a huge variety of cultures and perspectives, because Star Wars is such a hugely successful and well-loved storyline. It's like, you know, the sort of the modern day mythology. So we often see certain mythological concepts being echoed in slightly different ways across different cultures. We see things like the sun being a god in many different cultures. So this sort of feels like the sort of spreading of sort of a classic mythological tale across different cultures and the way that they would tell the stories.
Okay, so moving on from the Star Wars Visions Disney Plus series per se, but just to talk briefly about the tie-in novel that we found out a little bit more about. Now, this is due out in October. The title is Ronin, and it's coming from Del Rey, so it's part of the main lineup. And there's a few interesting things we just found out. Del Rey, the publishers, specifically were asked the question, is that novel canon, given that the Disney Plus series is not canon? Their response was, we would not categorize this as a what-if story. So it's not a straight-up canon versus non-canon, but they are strongly implying that it takes place. You know, it does actually exist. So the Ronin novel actually ties in directly with one of the very specific episodes that we're going to see on Disney+. It will expand on the world of the Duel, telling the story of a former unnamed Sith known only as Ronin, i.e. a wandering samurai, as he travels the galaxy. Kamikaze Duga's The Duel, helmed by director Takanobu Mizuno, focuses on Jedi and Sith, but with an alternate history pulled from Japanese lore, and it has become the inspiration for a new Star Wars novel unlike other in recent memory. So that quote comes from StarWars.com, and they straight up do use the word alternate history, but I think it's just an alternate interpretation rather than a parallel timeline sort of thing, given the other discussions that we've just had. All in all, I'm very much looking forward to the series. It's not that much of a wait, just to reiterate that date again, September the 22nd, so a couple of months now, and the novel in the following month. It's going to give us a lot to talk about in podcasts. I think by the time it rolls around, we'll probably actually be only analyzing and talking about a couple of episodes at a time, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
I was not expecting them to drop all of them at once. Disney Plus has kept to the classic broadcast of dropping a weekly episode, different to Netflix that drops their entire series all in one go. So it's interesting, maybe this is them sort of trialing a bit of the binge watch format, or whether they feel like they just don't want to maybe perhaps rank these different stories by putting them in some sort of sequence, whether they think the latter ones are more exciting or using a simpler one to start with. They're just keeping it level playing field and dropping them all at once. So yeah, we don't quite know how long these are going to be. You know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour. It's going to be interesting to see just how much content we get all on that time. So yeah, we're going to have to break it down to episodes to really delve into. But I'm really excited. It's not that far away. And if you have been diving into some of the classic Lucasfilm animation stories on Disney Plus that have just been released, like the old Droids and Ewoks cartoons, this sort of feels like much more in line with Star Wars than some of those episodes, even though those were done all those years ago and sort of merchandise and everything was tied into it. I would be really interested to see if there is going to be any other further merch released for these. Obviously, yeah. Droids and Ewoks went on all sorts of different directions and sort of some of the characters and things we wouldn't really think of as fitting within classic Star Wars storytelling in the modern era. So it'll be interesting to see whether these things pick up. And because we see concept Funkos made from concept art, we see art Funkos where they sort of paint some of the classic characters in different colors and things like that. So it'd be really interesting to see whether they have some perhaps limited merchandise ideas in line for these things.
But yeah, we don't have a single clue yet about any sort of merchandise. But yeah, you mentioned Funko there, and almost everything from the major franchises that's shown up on Disney Plus does have a Funko line associated with it. So yeah, maybe.
I think it could be fun, particularly for some of the ones that seem like they draw heavily on some of the samurai styles. I think that would translate quite well into action figures or Funko.
All right. So yeah, like I say, very much looking forward to that. We don't know 100%. We're probably only about, it's our interpretation that we're going to get them all at once based on the language that was used in describing that release date. So that's what we're running with at the moment, but we will find out very, very soon. Moving on to talk about product announcements, or more specifically store reports in the case of the material we've got to talk about today. A large number, or a good number, of 3.75 inch action figures have been hitting local New Zealand shelves. Quite interesting and exciting action figures, frankly. First up, the 3.75 inch scale series of Vintage Collection Gaming Greats action figures. We've talked about these before. We heard about them a little while back. They include a Heavy Battle Droid, an Electro Staff Purge Trooper, a Shock Scout Trooper, and a Shadow Storm Trooper. These have come from games like Jedi Fallen Order, Battlefront 2, and Force Unleashed. We knew initially that they were going to be released by EB Games. EB Games still has an August release date for those, but they've gone and shown up at Toy World, Toy Co, and Mighty Ape, and are shipping now, so a good number of collectors have them in hand. The only downside to these figures is that they've got the word exclusive associated with them, so they're priced at a higher point than standard or what you'd expect to pay for Vintage Collection action figures. You can get them for as cheap as $35 from Mighty Ape and Toy Co. Elsewhere, they are a little higher in price. That's a little bit unfortunate. I think 3.75 inch action figures tend to be priced in the $20 price range, and that's what we'd expect to see. But yeah, these do have the title of exclusive associated with them, and on that basis, retailers are pricing them at a higher price point. And I was really excited to hear and to see that the line of, or another wave of, the 50th anniversary Lucasfilm Vintage Collection 3.75 action figures have shown up at farmers department stores around the country. We've got confirmation from a number of branches in the major centers, but we're expecting them to see them around the whole country. So previously we've seen the Endor version of Princess Leia and Paplu the Ewok show up at farmers. They skipped the AT-ST driver from that wave in New Zealand. We don't know why. This time round, we see Endor, Luke, Tusken Raider, and Death Star droid. I really love these figures for a number of different reasons. Well, the main reason is that this wave includes a couple of first 21 wave characters. And by that, I mean figures that came out in the first 21 action figures in the late 70s. These have a strong nostalgic value for me. I love the Vintage Collection card back style in general because of its tie-in to the old style of cards. But anything that came out in the first 12 or first 21 releases of figures has particularly strong nostalgic value to me. And the Tusken Raider and Death Star droid from this wave qualify for that. I really want to get that Tusken Raider action figure. I don't have it at this point yet, but hopefully we'll be able to see it somewhere local to us. I don't want to go on too much of a ramble here, but you know, I remember just about where and when I got almost every one of my Vintage Action figures, even now. And anything from those first 21 figures that came out, I got at a point when I was receiving them as gifts from friends or family. It was from Empire Strikes Back onwards that I was buying them with, you know, money from after school work. But that first series, they were all gifts, so they're tied very strongly to birthdays and Christmases for me, and you know, they have a unique nostalgic value because of that. So just to reiterate, Endor, Luke Skywalker, Tusken Raider, and Death Star droid on the Lucasfilm 50th anniversary Vintage Collection card backs now at Farmers. Very cool line. Seem to be very popular amongst other fans as well. Finally, we just found out recently that Amazon, the Australian version of Amazon, which you access through amazon.com.au, now ships to New Zealand specifically. What this means is that product that is being housed in Australian warehouses will come to New Zealand. Now, we've been able to buy a lot of stuff from Amazon in the US, but being able to get it directly from a Australian warehouse might mean, or should mean, that we get charged a slightly lower shipping rate. Taking a little bit of a look at the amazon.com.au website to see what is available. Not a lot yet. There's still a lot that they list as coming through them via the US, and they won't bounce through them. So if you want to buy stuff from the US website, you need to do so directly. But we'll keep an eye on the situation and see where it evolves. Hopefully it might mean that we have greater access or cheaper access to some Amazon exclusive figures. We can't confirm any of that just yet, but this is a wait and see situation. Okay, talking about Bad Batch Episode 10, Common Ground, which screened last Friday. A quick summary on Raxus, which was the seat of the separatist government during the Clone Wars. The Empire has taken power, instituting curfew laws, and this leads to a little bit of conflict with the local senator, Arvi Singh, who speaks out against the Empire and is arrested. His protocol droid, a Death Star droid-style droid, GS-8, gets in contact with Sid, who passes on the task to the Bad Batch to aid Arvi Singh and rescue him, basically extract him from the planet. Omega's left behind on this mission because it's known that she has a number of multiple bounties and multiple bounty hunters targeting her. So she stays by and actually has her parallel storyline with Sid playing Dedrick and winning money playing Dedrick quite successfully. But as we'd expect, the Bad Batch has a successful mission and are able to extract and help Senator Singh and return him to Sid. One of the first things that struck us about this episode when we were watching it was the voice of the protocol droid GS-8. We, even before it finished, were trying to work out why that voice sounded so familiar, and it struck us that she sounds very much like Phoebe Waller-Bridge from Solo, A Star Wars Story. But it turns out that GS-8 is voiced by Sian Clifford, who actually plays Phoebe, the sister of Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character in Fleabag, so it's not unsurprising that they have near-identical accents. And the other main voice actor participating in this episode is Alexander Siddig, who voices Arvi Singh. Alexander Siddig has a Star Trek background. He was in Deep Space Nine. So the key take-homes from this episode was that at this point now, Bad Batch don't actually owe money to Sid, so they're not tied to her in quite the same way that they have been. We had a bit of a revelation about Omega's strategic skills, demonstrated by way of Dedrick Holochess, but implied to be, you know, of greater scope. And also this slightly smaller in terms of impact notion, I guess, that it doesn't look like the Bad Batch. They have greater confidence in Omega's capacity to look after herself, so they don't feel like they're going to need to leave her behind in the same way that they did in this episode. In terms of what we saw on screen, I really enjoyed the walker battles, the walkers on the streets of Raxus, and seeing the way they actually had the battle between the different walkers. And I just thought that was a really fun orchestration, a really fun representation of that aspect of warfare in the galaxy at this point in time.
Obviously, this one has the Bad Batch coming up against their preconceived notions, because they obviously have pretty entrenched ideals that were sort of hammered into them, almost bred into them from, their creation, that they were born to fight separatists. They're obviously always going to be biased against droids because they're, and so many of their brothers were killed by battle droids. So it's interesting them having to come across these sorts of conflicts outside of the Clone Wars. You know, do they still have those entrenched ideals and having to sort of find where they sit in the galaxy now? Obviously, the rest of their brothers are now on the side of the Empire. So now they're like, okay, so which is the worst one, the Separatists or the Empire? And in this instance, the Empire is the greater threat. The Empire is the one that's going after Omega.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to hit on that, yeah, because they're on a Separatist planet, but fighting clone troopers, most of whom we presume at this point are, in fact, still clones. So yeah, very, very interesting setup for them. And I did note that along the way, and as much as they could, they weren't killing clone troopers, they were just incapacitating and or stunning them.
I think they, through their experience with Wrecker, have a little bit of a sympathy for clone troopers that obviously still have their inhibitor chips, because they know that under certain circumstances they want to believe that their brothers would not be doing this of their own free will, that they believe that the clones are inherently good. They fought for the Republic, the sort of noble ideals of the galaxy, freeing people from the oppression that they perceived from the Separatists. So in sort of switching that around, it reminds me of some of the Clone Wars episodes where Ahsoka was dealing with having sort of a philosophical fight with Separatists, and where they stood, and she was sort of staunchly against the Separatists, but she was also having to come to terms with seeing things from their point of view. So it felt like there was a little bit of an echo of that, like these are clone troopers that were solidly on the side of the Republic, and now seeing that, you know, now that those hard lines of Republic and Separatists don't really exist anymore, that it's the Empire versus everyone else, and they've made it clear that they are not on the Empire's side. So that means if Separatists are against the Empire, then they're actually on the same side as the Separatists. So I thought that was sort of an interesting, albeit maybe slightly obvious, conflict that they would have to go through. But I did enjoy I almost enjoyed the side sort of storyline with Omega more. It's a common sort of idea, you know, the little kid brother, or in this case, the little kid sister, wanting to go along with the main people, but sort of like, you're too young, we don't want you to get hurt. And they're a very real threat, because obviously the Empire is hunting Omega, bounty hunters, they don't want her seen. They don't want to sort of play on the fact that she might not be able to sort of defend herself to the same extent that the rest of the Bad Batch can, so they keep her behind. And I thought it might just sort of play into a, she's going to be determined to get better at weaponry or something like that, or sort of, you know, come up with some idea to prove that, no, I can fight alongside you guys. So it was kind of interesting that they sort of played into her intelligence. Clearly, she is very smart, but this sort of really played into the fact that she's winning a strategy game that she thinks is quite easy, but to other people, it's actually quite hard to do. And obviously Cid, with her scheming money sort of minded ways, sees that she can basically team up with Omega and basically hustle cantina patrons, because they're unsuspecting that this seemingly sweet little girl is going to completely beat them at Hollow Chess. So I thought that was interesting. And of course the side note from that is their debt is paid off. So it's going to be interesting to see where their paths will choose. Obviously, they've been in debt to Cid because they owe her a lot of money, so they have to keep taking jobs, like this episode, where they didn't really want to take the job, but they had to because they're in debt. So now in the future, they may have the freedom to pick and choose which missions they go on.
Or move on in general.
Yeah. And they obviously need some sort of place to hide out, so I don't think we've seen the complete end of Cid and her help of the Bad Batch, but they're on a little bit more of a level playing field now because they don't owe so much. And she might want to kind of keep them around, seeing as Omega makes her a bit of money on the side too.
Well, it was a good side note in some ways that even though Cid is very self-serving, she let Omega earn enough money to pay off, to offset Bad Batch's debt. I thought that was a good side note, and it kind of did speak a little bit to her character and this underlying relationship that's developed between, you know, all parties there.
Yeah, she's obviously a bit of a rough character. She's obviously had to survive in a galaxy that's gone through a lot of upheaval and that, but she, underneath it, you can see that she really does want to help the clones and Omega. So I wasn't expecting a little bit of that sort of dynamic with Cid, but I quite enjoyed that. So again, we're kind of into a blank slate after this episode. We don't know whether we're going to see bounty hunters again, where they're going to go from here. We're getting a little bit through the series now. This was episode 10, so there can't be too many more episodes to go. So at some point, something dramatic is going to happen. I feel Crosshair is going to crop up again sometime soon. Obviously, with this episode not really touching on the Empire, I guess he's spent some time in a Bacta tank healing from his injuries, and he's got a grudge and a score to settle. So I don't think it's going to be long of a wait until he crops up again. So.
No, we'll find that out very shortly. I do enjoy talking about these episodes and breaking down the level of detail to the extent that we do, and I hope you do enjoy hearing us ramble on a little bit about them. And just to reiterate what's come in the past, hopefully in advance of watching the next episode when it comes out. So that's about it for today's installment, though. I guess we are done doing talking. Thank you for tuning in. We always do appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. We enjoy talking about Star Wars in person, but we also just enjoy being able to talk about Star Wars with our podcast audience. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders and another podcast episode next week and every Friday. Don't forget you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Thank you for listening.
And may the Force be with you.